y'all. Good evening.
Good evening.
It's awful when someone leaves you hanging. What are you going to do? It's wonderful being a lovely city of Cork. It's great to be here. This first poem, as it's your last night bartending, I thought we'd do for you. So if anybody's got a glass, please raise your glasses.
Yay!
Fear is my shepherd. I shall always want. He makes me to lie down in the gutter and empty stomach and vomit up some green thing that I did not eat. He needed me beside troubled waters and has anointed my income with outcome. He leads me in a path of wickedness. Yea, I walk through the streets of London, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy bottle and thy glass comfort me. Thou strippest the table of food in the presence of my family. Thou lovest my head of reason. My cup of sorrow runneth over, and has anointed my head with blood. Surely drinking shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall fight with the landlord forever. Amen. Okay, I've got quite a lot of time there, so I'm not really not sure what we're going to do.
Return to the microphone.
That's good, that's how I like it. This one here. Who's going to work tomorrow? This is for anyone who's going to work tomorrow, who works in an office. It's called office politics. Look at him, she sees. Sheldon's his team of spoons in the cup, you know what that means. He's too lazy to take it out, too worried about leaving a little stain on his desk or just not stench enough to lick it. Either way, he's a cunt. I dunk my biscuit and wonder if this makes me a wanker. Again, I apologize. This next one is a love poem. And I'll tell you a story about it once I read it. This is called And Too Many Birds Rebels. Love seeks from me. It steams in my piss, it flakes in my snot, it stinks in my sweat. Love is so much a part of me I could no more shit it out than I could stop my heart from beating. Love is my sustenance, my breakfast, lunch and dinner. It's my water, beer and spirit. I breathe its breath, wear its apparel, walk in its furrow, and live in its abundance. I feel love's colour on my face. And this is no drug talking. This is me who put his shoulder to the world. This is me trying hard to be better. So, I think we're going to get a love poem of sorts, yeah? About 3 months ago, I got an email off this company saying, we'd love to use that poem. Fine. What for? We're a teaching patch for schools. We'd love to use it. Standing good. What for? A teaching patch for secondary school kids on domestic violence. Lovely. I said yes, and churlish offers. This next one is quite a new poem, actually. And on this poem, I'm living East London. I live in St Newton, and this time on a bus going from St Newton down to Shoreditch for a reggae night, which I was quite partial to. It's called Come and Dance. In this dulcet dust, the lights from the chicken shops, mini cab offices, policy production, all the bling coming kind of the bus to dazzle the stars. The sky is a dark suit replete with the stains of an East London Saturday night. That stopped me at the bottom of the waist, a girl dressed as a flapper, dress cut from Twilight Balls. The feather in her hair punches our tongue smack on her nose. A bloke in a pony suit and dread trainers. When I say he's in a pony suit, pony is cockney for shit. I don't mean dressed as a horse. But it's Shoreditch, so it is worth it. I digress. He carries a white fedora, not even an up snap to sport it. I just stink like a leper. I hope tonight she ends up with someone else. It's the dark that makes the stars shine. At the next stop, three dance or queendom, fresh me island, each way less than she that proceeds and oh my days. So much good time squeezed into so small space. When the bass drops, Lord God Almighty.
Thank you very much.
So, did you see the news today? Genetic scientists have developed emograms. It cuts itself. This next poem is about a bar 2 doors down from my house. It's a Turkish gambling den, basically. So there are some bad Turkish accents in here, but no one is Turkish, so I guess I'll get away with it this time around.
This is called a rougher version.
That time in Efes, when the killer strolled in, I'm sure Mehmet saw it coming, because he blanched. And his eyes grew from the door, or the barman, and finally the man. The governor walked behind him as he sat leaning back in his chair, pulled slightly back and popped him in the air. I thought a skull would burst from a shot, but it was quite the opposite. As Umit said, there never really was much in that head of his. No explosion, no fountain, no split peach. Just a brief spray of blood. I remember the clarence flashing of a girl at the next table. Just that effusive spurt and then a dribble. He slowly leant to one side and settled. I've slept drunk at a self-same table many a time as a debtor. The quiet was disturbing. Everyone's first night after hours keep on account of murder, police, and questions, questions, questions. The assassin held a gun at his side, gave an embarrassed smile and said, "Sorry. So sorry, everybody. Sorry." With that, he calmly walked the length of the bar, around the side of the pool tables, and was gone into the night. His car leaves the room for a few moments. It was only when a chap walked over a glass as he fumbled for a drink that the first scream erupted. Anyway, as I told the old Bill, I was in the toilet when it happened. Thank you very much. This next one takes place on the Whitechapel Road in East London and has a phrase of Siletti in it. Siletti is to Bengali as Cockney to English, if that kind of makes sense. Yeah. The phrase is for a butler, it means the old fat git. I do have to mention, every time I do this one, this is my assistant, Athena Begum, and she does not have a big nose. The poem is called Begum. For such tiny teenagers, they sure take up a lot of the Whitechapel Road. Some in hair grips and lip gloss, some in hijab. A smackdown of Siletti, pull a butler, a tattoo of Cockney, do you get me? The one with the tightest scarf with the biggest nose. I wonder if this is the pressure of the fabric. An irrepressible, active individuality forcing its way, or whether she's just unlucky.
This one's a bit more poetic.
As we're a poetry reading, I should do something fairly poetry, I think. This is a form of poem called a pantoum, which is actually a Malaysian form of poetry. And this is actually taking place in Los Angeles. It's called L.A. Rain. You can see the neon and never see the light. The footsteps of all those you can afford not to walk, readily washed away. Men's feet in women's shoes. The footsteps of all those you can afford not to walk. Water, dancing hip shops across the oil schmear. Men's feet in women's shoes. The yuckers of Santa Monica Boulevard. Water, dancing hip shops across the oil schmear. Water finds its unlevel. The yuckers of Santa Monica Boulevard. The gutters form the thirsty. Water finds its own level, only cream and bastards float. The gutters form a burst in. Fresh water gives life, this beat stands. Only cream and bastards float. Waitresses quarter the channels of Chinatown. Fresh water gives life, this beat stands. dirtiest rain I ever saw. Waitresses caught to the channels of Chinatown, readily washed away. Dirtiest rain I ever saw. You can see the neon and never see the light. This one, funny enough, has also got a rain in it, to an extent, not that there's any sort of lead there. But it's called My Own Private Idyllic Pino. And one of my favourite things is watching old Sherlock Holmes films, and it's kind of comes in for that. Not even the completeness of rain, just the language I might or I might not, indecisiveness of dull, dreary drizzle. I'm already reconciled not leaving the ants. There's a Sherlock Holmes film on the telly. It's not going well for him. Moriarty, the very genius of evil, is about to snatch the crown jewels. Indeed, Holmes is in a tight spot, but he'll pull through. I'll make do with what's in tow. Outside, all I can see is the sky pressing down and my underpants flapping on the line. I should go bring them in, but they're only underpants. Clean with me, moist with London. There they hang, my flag of surrender. This next one, is it the same in court, but you know like community centres and community bookshops, they're actually for people who don't fit in the community? Which is kind of about that. It's called The 1980s Are Long Time Dead. The books in the community bookshop have gathered a lot of dust. Despite being neatly divided onto black, Asian, lesbian and gay shelves. Opposite, Florian is doing a roaring trade. Since buying the shop from Mr. Chowdhury a couple of months ago, he's added Polish to the stacks of Caribbean, Turkish, kosher and English food. The shop is usually busy. Busy and noisy. In the rare moments of calm, Florian often gazes over at the faded picture of Maya Angelou in the bookshop window. He thinks she looks like a nice lady. He wonders who she is, where she lives, and bets she can put away a lot of salami. I can do one about my girlfriend giving up drinking. To the bankhead, poetry, or West London. Let the good times roll. When Susie gets back from drying out, I'll let her pour the coffee. Salt or keep stum, whichever way the milk spills. Her face won't be a mess. Her clothes will be clean, her head will be clear. There'll be a party, and some fool will drag out all those old punk rock records, all those ones she loves so much. There'll be beer, there'll be juice. Time will be tight, tongues will be loose. There'll be a party, we'll all be delighted. When Susie gets from drying out, Susie won't be invited. Okay, this next one comes with an epigraph and I can find it. And you know, this next one is about the artist Gilbert and George. Okay, and the epigraph comes from the Times and states as such. Correction. The image of the week on page 5 of the Knowledge today, purporting to show you artist Gilbert and George looking uncanny like Morecambe Wise, is in fact of Morecambe and Wise. We apologise for the error. By a strange quirk of fate, I eat breakfast in the same cap as Gilbert and George most mornings, and this is about that. Number 2 breakfast. Gilbert and George are those lovable tosspots who make art out of skinhead chips, spunk and put their bare bottoms on the stained glass. Oftentimes they dine in the same cap as me, and I love a good cap. Who'd have thought? The old history of our country is there. The dark ages of black pudding. jam and toast, Tudor robustness. The imperial glory, the fried egg, industrial, baked beans revolution, Pol Pot and martyred mushrooms, the humble banger, this was their finest hour. An insipid gentrification of the vegetarian option. There's not a city that flatters. Even the clock is slow, it's 10 the right time. This particular palace, Rossi, is featured on page 112 of Russell M. Davies' book, Egg, Bacon, Chips and Beans, I Research. The entry notes, the biggest tall spot orders that you've ever seen, and in fairness, they're about that big, which is pretty good for sauce bottles, both red and black. Can't say fairer than that. Indeed, it is a fine establishment. Wood, metal top tables, cheeky waitresses, all the necessaries. A decent breakfast serves not only body, but nourishes soul and feeds on character. On this particular day, the cook had noted posters papered outside for the chap's latest show, was Jesus a homosexualist? Not one to be outdone, he prepared and personally served two steaming plates of a full monkey. Regular punters are astonished at this handling of special. The fried eggs are regular eyes. The beans are there. Black pudding nose and the sausages are beaming grin. With the plates laid in front of them, the chaps are down as deadpan, as frying pan, and as James plate. When George asked Gilbert to pass the brown sauce, a hush falls.
So yeah, that is Rossi's Cat, Hanbury Street, London E1. I get free breakfast every week for promoting. Shop your one. Let's have a look. I'm trying to find something else here. I'll kind of see this one. Last year I did my first ever music festival, which actually turned out better than I thought it would. And it was a festival in Suffolk called Latitude. And this is about what happened. It's called On the Toilet Facility at Latitude Festival. It doesn't help with the obvious metamorphoses on the train. But once arriving with tent erected, anxiety slips and I start to relax. Time for a contemplative break. The toilets are a row of stalls set above. The toilets are a row of stalls set some 6 foot above an hungry chasm. My ship drops in ruins as fast as it condemns. Paper flutters down like prayers. Sat above this Hades, I feel a discernible sense of power. Toilets are usually a confining affair, bouncing back noise and cramped confines. Here, the depths echo their awful majesty. Once at the poetry stage, I'm to read after the scaffold's Roger Madoff. Midway through his set, I adjourn to the backstage portaloo. As my piss arcs perfectly in, I stare down at the swimming Richards and wonder, which one is Madoff?
Hello, how are you?
Hi,
looks
good.
Excellent, happy you're doing it. Come in, take a seat.
Oh,
so, this next part is about this lady. Young people, you know who this is?
Jane Hexton.
Close. She had millions over there. Older people. Yes. The all close is Betty Grable. It's Betty Grable. She was a star of 1940, sir. You're probably too young to remember it. But she was a big star of the 1940s. She was painted on the side of American bombers that flew out of England a lot. And she had the legs insured for $1 million, which is fair enough. And this is a poem about her. My mate's wife and I were talking about war films. And she was telling me about her mum during the war. How it was when England was full of Americans and we bombed on the Germans. And all she ate is Betty Grable, she said. Get her ass like a bank full of groceries. I don't know about that, but it got me thinking that many a bloke in the 1940s hadn't seen a bag full of groceries in a very long time. And maybe that explains Betty Grable's pin-up status. Now, did you know that Mickey Rooney, the comedian Hollywood icon, was for a short time Mr. Betty Grable? Strange but true. And did you know that Raoul Bushton Goodwill taught a London Bushton Center who helped the Cockneys keep their pet up? My grandfather, no less, shook hands with Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney looked up and into the eyes of my grandfather and said, shake the hand that held the cock that fucked Babe Green. So what this means, ladies and gentlemen, my fingers are just one, two, three handshakes from Betty Grable's pussy.
Again, I can only apologize. I don't know what gets into me. Actually, I do really much. Okay, I can do one about my glasses. I can do one about the cap again, or one about Sam Cook.
The cap
again, alright. You know when you're in a camp, there's always something on the menu that's misspelled.
Yeah,
there's...
Yeah,
thinking about that. It's called sweet. At the table opposite is sat a Japanese girl who just ordered a breakfast. And told her friend that she needs a bang to eat her first sausage. I don't know about you, but that's stupid to me. In a space of a minute or two, her face ranges through curiosity, examination, recognition, delight, and satisfaction. It's longer than I would manage. It's just as she leans gently forward to swallow that the menu catches my eye. Cherry pie, £2.10. With ice cream, £2.20. Okay, this one is about growing up in a flat in Stamford Hill, but to be honest, it could be anywhere with very papery walls. For when a man's in love, it's a splendid thing. On the job, he keeps it screwed tight. In a vault, key thrown away. He knows how many tractors CD has to run, where the all-solo will kick in, where his unpaid bills are, what page of book tops the floor beside his bed lies open on. He knows the old topography of the room and his place within it, where tips and art and love and passion, where they course through it. Having grown up in a block here with neighbours, friends and parents are at it, this grunting smacks of the mundane. He tries to secretly glimmer, wrap it in silence so what it is remains it alone. For her, it's the abandoned. The lady rampage, the air out of place, all the thistles and mayhem she can get. He's not sure of her, yes, 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 it's from her pleasure or for his benefit. He wishes she'd be quiet and so works that little bit harder, spurring her on to that one affirmation more. He likes westerns, the badman galloping into town, guns blazing. She loves the shadowy allure of the silent grapes. Alright, political fans, this is as political as I get, and this next one is about a 1920s actress to the banquet.
You okay with young people?
She was, suffice to say, she was a very dirty girl. And this next poem actually comes from one of my favourite things is in England every 6 months or so, they release a lot of sort of secret files that have now been declassified. And this poem came from one where two Eton schoolboys, which is our big public school, were expelled for being caught with food and banquet in their room. Mm-hmm. And this is all kind of through the paperwork involved in that. And it's called, I'm being expelled from Eton for shagging food and banquet. I never went to Eton, nor sang any Hollywood sirens. If I'd have had the background and the privileges that money provides, I'd have been there, mate. Been there, pinching in one hand, dick in the other. The 1920s were made for a bloke like me. Brilliant team, Lady Air pioneers, Bob Dare and Max Sennett, the decade that roared. I've read nearly all of Fitzgerald, even The Vegetable, which would be shit like. Off Broadway for a week. Again, I've read. I'd have fitted right in,
me, Timothy George Wells, Esquire, a lost generation groping its way in a darkened home to Luna, a girl who reputedly bedded 40% of British aristocracy. British, not English, that's a lot of nods. We're talking proper bad girls here. Bad girls with a sense of class. Alabama girls find out daddy's house for immoral proclivity. Girls discovering sex, drink, parties, and fabulous frocks. That I was a sexless aristocrat. With an absurd moniker and an even more ridiculous nickname, moving to the Hotel de Paris on a sunny summer morn with a star of 30 a week. She throws the car around a bend, one hand on the wheel, t'other on my thigh, eyes on my Petronius. I nervously quit the saucy epigram for Marshall. She nuzzles my ear and whispers, I've been called many things but never an intellectual. Oh my dear, does it require an academic to teach the facts of life? The first Lord of the Admiralty, William Bridgman no less, MI5, Young Office, all concerned for our morals. But us lads are eating and dining out on our salad day. The scandal, like me, will be sat on. Seduced by the girl as pure as a driven thrush. She's always skating on thin ice and everyone wants to be there when it breaks. My grandfather watched her film. He died coughing black lung in the 1990s. To his last words, Cody. My only regret is a playboy life I never had. I've been expelled from eating for shagging through the bankhead, where there's better than Spanish flu, coal mining, the general strike, and what my family really did through the 1920s.
We're doing okay? Alright. I'm just doing this one because I like it really. And you just explain in court that like the east is pretty good and the west is shit. Obviously, given accent, I'm from East London, and this is about West London, and it's called A Picture from Life's Other Side. I don't live in West London. Where our cool you are is determined by how stupid your name is. Where hip-hop climbs like a weed and bad slang spreads like a flu. Not having a problem is the problem. Complexes masquerade complexity and neuroses hunt in packs. I don't live where lunch on the moon is the way of life, where jazz. It's the tears of an unsated addict. Choose life, but yeah mate, is life gonna choose you? All you need is love and a portobello road seduces itself. The king's rusting atop the bus stop roof, mirror-sized his search for something to search for, and yeah, that chick in the shades may look cool, but she's still nursing two lovely black eyes. Where the underground is overground and can't get enough of too much. I do not abide where the attention span is as long as the last white line where Jamiroquai. Working on a building of love is really nailing down the roof on his musical career. No, I don't live in West London, but I write poetry, and that's bad enough. Okay, this is quite a new one again, and I've been wearing glasses for about 3 months now, so I'm still getting used to them, and this is about my glasses. I've been quite horrified that they haven't seen that once, and I really thought I lived a better life than that. I feel quite cheated, you know. So this is called Steamy Windows. I've been sporting my bins a while now. A matter of months and they've not seen that once. This concerned me. I thought I lived a carry-on life. One with a fair dash of sorts, but not once has a peak of cleavage or a peep of arse caused any condensation at all. I feel cheated. Well, petitioned by circumstances, by life. In my boyhood, it seemed that Charles Altree's fought out inside of a Turkish bath every time a winsome young team bent over. I remark upon this to a bespectacled friend, one who has worn them for years rather than my paltry months. He said that Altree's were warm pubs and cold weather has done it for him. For several weeks of a paper spring, I walked into a variety of pubs, East End, West End, even across the river. Lunchtime, evening, night, nothing happened. I hunched face down at my usual lager top. I tried brandy, whiskey, and worked my way across the top shelf, niche. My girlfriend notes my frustration, as she is wont to do. She holds my hand and tells me reassuringly that it'll happen for me. It doesn't. Perhaps I've looked in all the wrong places. I phone her from work and tell her I'm going to the old ass. That's the best strip pub that East London has to offer. Best in my apartment's been the one where your shoes stick to the carpet, the girls have stretch marks, bruises, and it's tears before bedtime. A couple of hours later, nothing. Lager top, arses, salt and vinegar crisps, tits, banjos, pussies, a pickled egg and a girl who makes her arsehole inches from my face, which to be honest I could have done without. Nothing. When I get home she clocks my boat and can tell that I'm not best pleased. All the same she asks hopefully how it went. I dejectedly shake my head. She tells me that she's sure the former Soviet rock girls tried their very best for me. She takes both my hands, leans into my face and a gentle breath into my face. There. The glasses miss the fine gem of her whisper. She lifts her index finger and writes her initials onto the lenses. The first upon the left, the next onto the right in what to her must be mirror writing. What can you see, she asks. Oh yes. I love you and you love me.
Okay. This next one is about poetry in a strange way. And it's called When the Water Rises, So Does the Foam. It took him some time, but he managed to speak with a string of girls whose birthmark made up all the punctuation of modern English grammar. The full stop was easy enough. The exclamation mark came too quickly. He served one girl at dinner and about to split level flat just because the two moles on her cheek resembled a colon. The semicolon, a Japanese design sheet, it was harder. The question mark, obviously, was hardest of all. Next we think we'll try girls whose freckles make up words in Morse code.
All you hit down things know about Sam Cooke, yeah?
Yeah.
He was the first song synthesized, one of the first gospel singers to go to soul. And any of the older people know how he died? He was shot. He was shot to death chasing a prostitute around a hotel. He was wearing one shoe and a dressing gown, and his last words were, "Lady, you shot me."
Sam Cooke's birthday, and everyone is bringing it on home. To play swinging and folk singing. Skirts have been so short and saying so much since I turned her first kicked out that I kept in St. Louis. At a week, the girl dresses a flat, a camel walks to a table laden with cake. Old Sam snatches that mantle, rubs it over her charms, pushes his green face right on in there. That's the icing on the cake. Just then, the boys set the champagne bottles popping. Corks ricocheting off the wall. Sam blanches, his attention on a smear of every strawberry jam between the girl's breasts. Suddenly, he feels cold and alone.
Okay, a couple more from me. And then we've got your open mic, I believe. Is anyone called Mike for the open mic? I'm fine as there is.
Bottle marks. I used to have this bird that liked to wear short pleated skirts and clean white knickers. She used to like me to bend her over my knee and spank her hard and slap my hand so hard that she pissed. And she loved it. Me, I never really got much out of it apart from the fact that my shoes used to really stink. Anyway, it's all over. And this last one again features my grandfather, and it's called Space. So, in the war, my grandfather served in submarines. He said that they stank. The men sweated all the time, and sweat and condensation dripped from everything. From the bunks, from the metal, from the light bulbs, from the very men themselves. The air was rank and heavy, and intense like all that smeared everything. Most of the men just lay in their bunks. It was two men to a bunk, one awake at his post, the other sleeping. A constant turnaround so that the beds never got cold, and the lights never went hungry. Above my grandfather's bunk he stuck a picture. It was a picture of himself, standing alone, arms outstretched, head back, blowing a kick at the sky. He looked tiny. He was in a field, alone, with mountains behind him and a blue sky spread out like an ocean. My grandfather would lie back and put himself between the distant horizons we once stood. The other men are pictures of wives, girlfriends, lovers, pin-ups. But my grandmother sent this particular photograph to my grandfather, and it was this he told me that made him realise what a rare woman she was. Thank you, everyone.